Welcome back. We're going to continue with our podcast with Brother Gary Moon. And with us now, we have Melissa Holden, the Vice President of Unifor Local 636. Welcome back, Gary and Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Gary, so let's pick up where we kind of left off. So we talked about the history. We talked about Bob White. We talked about going from the UAW to the CAW and in 2013 going to Unifor. So I want to take you back to CAW days, and I want to just talk about the local and how the local went. Do me a favor, explain how membership meetings used to go here at the local when we were CAW, and let's go back as far as you can remember. And what were the membership meetings like? And because I attended a few back in the day, and there was a lot of people here, and it got boisterous, and sometimes we had to do extensions to stuff. What do you remember about the CAW days and when our membership was a lot bigger? Let's keep in mind, you would know better how big our membership was at the time. So let's go back to the late 80s, early 90s and talk me through a membership meeting here, would you?
The late 80s and 90s, we'd have a meeting here at 7 o'clock and we'd get into all the different issues that were going on, whether there was protests coming up or other upcoming sets of negotiations and all the different viable issues of the night, and then we'd get into plant reports, and it gets to the point there some of the issues got very hot and carried on. We'd have a 10-minute extension at 10 o'clock, and that 10-minute extension became another 10-minute extension, and a lot of people would go out of here a little ticked off, but they got their viewpoint across, and they'd start to wake people up that they need to pay more attention to what's really going on in the local and the other plants, and all try to stick and work together because we're all a part of one, home, and that's where it should be instead of this inroad fighting. Because it sometimes it used to be, one plant taking a shot at the other plant because they thought they were getting priority over something.
Okay, so you talk about extensions, and since 2017, since I've been the sitting president here at Local 636, we haven't had one of those big meetings. When you say extensions, where do these extensions come from? Like, are they a constitutional thing, a bylaw thing, or did they just say that this meeting's really good and let's extend it 10 more minutes? How did that work?
Well, it used to be in the bylaws that the meeting had to be over by 10 o'clock, and if it went beyond that, you were allowed to request a 10-minute extension, and sometimes it went on to two extensions. By the time it got to three, by 10:30 type of thing, you were out the door. That was over and done with, and the rest would be tabled till the next meeting.
Okay, so we had to get extensions because we had so many people there. What was the biggest amount of membership that Local 636 that you can remember was at that time? Like, I remember hearing that, and because I worked at Standard Tube, we had around 1,500 members there at one point, and GM was big, and because it was all manufacturing back then before we...
I think there at that point in time, used to be around 1,300 at our place, 650 at the GM warehouse. The foundry was still there with about 150 people, Thomas Bus with a couple hundred, at Beards Lane with 200, different plants like that. And so I think at one point in time, we were up around 2,800 or 2,900 in members.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Right now, we're currently sitting at 2025. We're sitting at around 2,000. So we've lost some and gained some here over the years. So how many workplaces can you remember that Local 636 represented at its prime time, let's say?
Oh, I don't know. I got to think of 17, I think, at one point in time.
Well, we're up to 25 work different collective agreements now. But then in the same token, we have four collective agreements at the Woodstock Hospital
You have to take into consideration, the Foundry closed, Thomas Bus closed, the Kirsch closed, the Wellwood Plywood Factory where Bob White came from, it closed. Gardner Denver closed. Fisher Control closed. FMC, which was out on the highway where Starcraft is now, whatever, that was a part of it. We had Truck Engineering closed. We lost a lot of plants. We've picked up a few since, but there's a lot of plants that employed a lot of people. I mean, Truck Engineering, I think at one time, was around 200 people working there.
Wow. So do you remember when we got into representing healthcare? Do you remember what year that was?
I was going to make a guess on that.
Oh, do you have an idea?
I have a guess. I want to say it was around 2000. I want to say around 2001.
I think it was around 2001. Somewhere in that category, because I know, I think it was around 2001 when they broke away from the
SEIU.
Uh-oh, now we bashing other unions on our podcast. Uh-oh. So, okay, outside of that, the locals changed a lot in its size, and we have a Ross Geary Hall now, a Bob White Hall now. What do you remember the local looking like when you first got involved with Local 636 here on 126 Beale Street?
Well, in 1970, when I became a member, we used to host the Poem Council ball tournament and stuff. That was one of my first times into the hall before I got involved with as a steward or anything. And you used to come in the front entrance, and the office has all changed now because Donna's office was at the top of the stairs.
Donna Stricker, her
office is up there where the secretary's office is now. Was just a waiting room and so on. We had the other divisions up here. We had Noel Stoodley, and we had back of that day, Charlie Carson was our financial secretary. He had a small office. The rest of the hall went out to, if you're in the main hall, you'll find that there's a part of the wall there with double studding there where you can see a crack down through it where they joined the pillars. That was the end of the original hall.
Well, don't call it a crack. People will think our local's falling down. A seat. Yeah.
Anyways, and then on the, when you went out of the office, on the right-hand side was the women's washroom, the men's washroom where Scott's office is now the financial secretary's office. Then it was the kitchen. Then it was the bar. Then it was the janitor's room. And then there was where the double doors are at the back. That was the exit out into the asphalt parking lot. And you went back about 45 feet to the horse barn, which we had all paneled inside for small meetings and used it for during the strikes there. That was the headquarters for different plants to have their people in there to get on the phone and call to get people out to the picket line.
Well, you mentioned the word that everybody wants to talk about, and especially going back and having the history that you bring to this conversation, strikes. What was one of the biggest strikes that you can remember? And was strikes something of the norm back in the day? Because we always had to fight employers in order to get what we wanted. So, I mean, what was a big strike? And was it, like I said, was it a common occurrence to go on strike in order to get what we got? Or was it the fear there, and was the union strong enough? And after a couple of really big strikes, they're going, oh, shit, I don't want to piss around with CAW.
Well, there was a lot of strikes around the local back in them days, starting in the 70s. I mean, when I first come around, there was one at Hall and Hitch. They used to just about every contract that ended up getting to the point of a strike. They had, I think, three strikes, if I'm not mistaken, over the years. And then where I worked at Standard Tube, we had a real bad strike that went for 8 weeks back in 1975, where we had them coming in trying to take the tooling and dies out of the plant, and there was over 1,000 out there on strike. We tore up the railroad tracks to keep them from coming in. We had the goon squad come and try to beat us up from the OPPs with their clubs, trying to salvage the jobs, and it was a very vicious strike at that time. And, you know, it was warranted because what happened is we had a new HR manager that thought he was Mr. Superior. I won't say what country he came from, but he said he thought they were the number one nationality in the world, and that he was pulling the collective agreement on a Friday morning as far as strike action and any grievances. So he started firing different employees throughout the day on the Friday, which forces with no alternative but to go out on the Sunday night in January. We're out until February the 16th, and it was a very brutal strike. And they took a lot of stuff out of here. Chrysler took their tooling at the end. GM served the company with a few $1 million writs for to get their stuff, but we never did Chrysler work in the plant again right up until I retired, other than that they would get us to do prototype assemblies and then we'd work all out of the wrinkles, but they still never give us the contract.
Yeah. So I remember hearing about that strike. Obviously, I wasn't in the working world when that strike, by any stretch of the imagination. I think I was 3 years old, to be quite honest with you. So how did we get to a resolve on that strike? Because I heard people were laying on tracks, people got arrested, people were getting beat up with billy clubs and then arrested. And so walk us through kind of a memory lane of what that strike looked like and how we got to a resolve.
Well, it's a tough one. It's a long time ago, but I remember, like, even though Stoodley got charged with inciting a riot and the whole nine yards, and then we had to go to court, and the union hired Greenspan out of Toronto to represent him to get him off the charge. He ended up with an absolute discharge, but they wanted to charge a whole bunch of us.
Did any of those charges stick?
I don't believe they did, other than the one maybe where it was – he was slapped on the hands and given what they called an absolute discharge, but it still stays on your record to a point there.
Oh, very.
And he wasn't even there at the time. The whole thing was when that happened, when the goon squad and these truckers come in to get all our equipment, they were actually up in London in negotiations, and he wasn't even there. So that's where it came about on this thing. And everybody used to laugh about how can you charge somebody with inciting a riot when you're not even there.
Yeah, exactly, right. Wow. So what year do you remember that we started doing expansions? Because if memory serves me correctly, there's been a couple or three, maybe, I don't know, maybe you can educate me on how many times we've expanded Local 636.
The first one was in before Noel Stoodley left. He left in 77 to go with the Canadian Labor Congress. It started in 1976. We made an addition to the back of the hall all the way back to what was the horse barn. And but we didn't touch it. It stayed the way it was. But we did away with the washrooms and everything on the right hand side of the hall.
So when you put in a new kitchen, a new bar. When you walk in the hall, so the first addition would be from your crack in the wall, which is a scene, back to the end of the kitchen and then straight across. Is that how it was?
Back to the end of the kitchen, straight across the washrooms and the mezzanine entranceway in the bar and the kitchen. That was. And some of the floor in the main hall was all the new extension.
So that didn't include the coat room, right? So it stopped at the door of the coat room.
That's right.
And then come, okay.
Yeah. All right. So then that was in 77. In later on in the 80s, we put on where the cloak room is, we put on some storage area there. And then... in the 90s, we ended up extending the hall back to where it became the Ross Jury Hall. We did away with the horse barn and went back as far as the city would allow us to go.
I'm going to say that was early 90s because I think it was in 94. I think it was already done because personally,
likely was.
I can only remember the local looking the way it does now. I mean, yeah, there were the paint colors and stuff were different and stuff like that, but I don't remember anything but the way the hall looks.
I think
now.
It was in the early 90s. I think it was prior to you getting hired at the plant in the 93, 94 era. I think it was done before that. I know we went through a lot of discussions on doing it and why we wanted to do it. And we were having a lot of deterioration problems with the small horse barn that was attached. You know, we kept patching and stuff. So then it was a decision. We had some money at the time to go ahead and finish the hall the way it is. And one of the things that we did do back in 1976, that everybody should be aware of, is that the beam structure that's in there that was put in when we redid the hall with the first main extension is allowed us that if at any time in the future you can go up one more story. It's structurally sound to go up one more story.
That's right. So the only way that 126 Beale Street, Local 636, could be expanded is up, not
that's
out.
Up. You can't go any further back because in the parking lot, there's a drainage from the city goes all through under there. We're at the back corner that they cut us off at. We wanted to actually go back a few more feet, but we couldn't because of the underground drainage and stuff like that. That takes it all the way down to the sewage disposal plant.
All right, so we're going to take another little break here, but please join us for episode number 3 because I have a lot more questions for Brother Moon. Having history of the local is all about remembering where you come from, remembering who paved the road for what we currently have today. So please join us back on episode number 3.